You know what I was thinking is we've been podcasting now for a year and a week, and we have no episodes out. So how are we handling this? We're going to be all upbeat. Welcome to Defined Moments and Memories, which, by the way, you came up with that name. But I will say that when we get into what the podcast is about, I actually don't think it's moments and memories. It's the moments after the moments. That's how I always think of it.
I know you focus on that, but it never actually comes out.
I know.
Where your brain is locked into, but your brain's also locked into like the one thing, like you want the one memory. And
So this is our second time recording this, recording episode one. And why
third, depending on
depending on how you want it. and I'm not sure that we're off to a banging start either. So we may have a fourth.
Let's be honest. We continue to shake the rust off.
Well, okay, we're going to get to what this podcast is about. But at what point in a song, when you hear a new song, do you go, all right, I've heard enough? Is it like 10 seconds in, 15 seconds in, first verse?
Well, it depends on God. There are some that maybe it gets better, but within the first 10 seconds, I'm like, I'm out.
Do you feel that the artist builds credit? Like if it's, who's your favorite? Ray LaMontagne? Is that how you say that guy's name?
Ray LaMontagne, like, yeah.
If he's got a new song, you're going to give him a longer because he's built credit with you, right?
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So, but if it's a new song, you've never heard this band, you're 10, 15 seconds and you're out, right?
Probably. I just think there's like, we've talked about this. There's so much out there. There's too much out there now to spend your time, you know, go. I'm jumping to the next.
Where in the podcast game do you stop? Because I'm just trying to figure out at what point people stop listening to this.
How long have we been on for?
Yeah. I don't know that we grabbed them right out of the beginning, but no, So here's the grab. Here's the pitch. What is this about, Eric?
This podcast is about the moments that define us as individuals, not just you and I, but our guests that we also have on to interview. So what are those things, whether that's personally or professionally, you know, that happen that stick in your brain as this thing happened to me and I know that changed who I am or how I am for the rest of my trajectory, whether you want to call that personally or professionally or whatever that is.
And what I was
saying, your take
it's that moment. Sure. We have to, you talk about that moment, but it's the moment after the moment. The case in point would be is you and I both worked with the artist Pitbull a lot. And his whole story is that he went to this music video set. His teacher got him on a music video set. He battles this one of DMX's rappers and it gets written about in a magazine. And then all of a sudden he's known, but that's not necessarily the case. He's known for that moment, but to build a career, what happens after that? That's the thing that always interests me. And when we sit and listen to him talk, that was always like, wow, that's amazing. You know? So now we talked about Pit. So why don't we explain who we are and why we think that we're entertaining enough for people to listen to.
Yeah. See, I don't know about that. But yeah, so I know. Who are we? Are we going all the way back? That you are, who are we or who are we?
No one cares about our past yet.
Part of the reason we are redoing this for the third time, our first episode, is because we came to the conclusion that we are entirely too filtered. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this whole thing plays out and how unfiltered we're going to be able to be and the level of comfortability with sending that out there to the world. Because we have a history.
It's not just that we were filtered, because I thought about this a lot. Yes, we were filtered, and we'll get to why we were filtered in a second. But also, two things that we have working against us. One is, you live in Michigan, I live in Texas. So we're on Zoom. So our dynamic is, I mean, I fight with you more than I fight with anyone. So it's hard to talk over each other. You want to let the other person finish. And so our dynamic is going to get loud. And I don't know that we hit our dynamic on the first 16 times we tried episode one.
We, for sure, we did not. We haven't, it's been very rare with the stuff we put together for us to have our natural dynamic, which I think is going to be kind of key.
But I will say this, the advantage that we have of doing this over episode one over is that we locked in or recorded a lot of interviews already. Yeah. We are pretty good in those interviews, if I say so myself. I'm saying from an entertainment standpoint.
And
okay. So here's why I think we should do this. I'm going to start with me first because, you know.
Go for it.
I, along with some partners, owned a television production company. And I say owned because we sold it to Asylum. But we do television programming basically across the board. True crime. We've done ghost shows. We've done sports shows, history shows. I mean, across the board. Our bread and butter right now is we sell TV shows and we make the TV shows. So I say that because part of my business is understanding what is entertaining. And that's why I say when we are good in those interviews, because I've listened to a couple of them already, and we're good because they're entertaining. They're entertaining interviews.
I found it really interesting. I was going back and looking back at some of my notes before we started recording today. We are almost exactly a year ago that we had this conversation. The original conversation where you were up in the summer and we were out on the back deck and we were talking about like whatever. And we had been listening to Smartless. You had turned me on to Smartless some, you know, a couple of years ago now. Right. And you were listening to them all the time while you were walking during the pandemic and you turned me on to them and I started listening to them too. And it was fun. And we were just kind of talking about that. And we're like, why wouldn't we do something? Why don't we just do something that's fun? Something that's fun for us to, you know, we can use it as a means for us to catch up and, you know, do what we do in terms of banter and have, you know, random conversation about stupid stuff. And that was like the genesis of the idea that then grew from the initial conversation of, you know, you wanted to start bringing in interviews. And we started like developing an idea around it, an actual idea of this, you know, defined in this moments and memories, the things that we thought were, you know, were interesting. And the things that we found interesting in the people that we've talked to over the years, right? And the conversations that we've had with them and the stories that they would tell, that behind the scenes stuff, it's the deeper stuff that's the everyday thing or the grind part of it, or, you know, the how things played out, you know, after the thing that people know about, you know, those kinds of things.
That's the stuff that always interests us or interests me, I should say. I don't want to speak for you, but I'll say this too, is that podcasts now, these deeper dives into conversations, I think people appreciate the, all right, we're past the surface level, let's dig deeper.
To that point, unquestionably, and it probably should have happened like right at the get-go, which is to your point about how we gonna hook these people, we probably should throw in some clips from the interviews of like, you know, like, oh, what, ooh, like what kind of stuff? What kind of stuff are we doing? What kind of are we talking about? Pull some out of, you know, some of the people we've interviewed with and throw some clips, show some clips. The vast majority of the people that we've interviewed are contacts that you have, right? Or relationships that you have built. Some I've been part of, but most are from your side. And that's why
in all honesty, I think it's pretty split down in the middle right now.
Sure. But I guess for the listener, people that listeners yeah. will have heard of or know or whatever the case yeah. is. You know, those are the people we're going to want to make sure are up front on this, this clip to just, you know, it adds some credibility and it shows the fun stuff that we've been doing. But that's what's really interesting to me. Like we go through the interviews and we sit down and it's actually the fun part that, you know, I don't know a lot of these people, the relationships that you have, and I get to sit and listen to these people. I'm meeting them for the first time, you know, virtually. And then I get done. I'm like, oh, that was cool. That was fun. You know, I enjoyed hearing what they had to talk about or whatever. So if we have some fun doing it, I think that other people out there will enjoy it. And if not, it's at a worst case scenario, it defaults back to our original conversation, which is us spending time together, hanging out, doing some stuff and being able to, you know, have topics and things to talk about.
When we set in our original idea of doing a podcast, it really was, hey, Saturday, like our lives are so hectic and fast moving and stuff that we don't get that much time to catch up. So it was really like, hey, let's do a podcast. We can tell stories that define us. We were going to have just high school friends at that time, like on to tell it. But then I made a deck and
yeah, then you derailed.
Once you make a deck. Yeah. Once you make a deck.
Yes, there was a deck made very early. All right, so back to me, you know, my background is not nearly as interesting or part of the entertainment industry as yours has been.
Can you give your backstory already? Jesus.
Yeah, I don't. Well, how far back? What do you want to know? So
I don't want to go to when you were born.
Okay, I'll jump a few months past that. My background is very engineering oriented. I originally started off with mechanical engineering degree, which was following in my father's footsteps type thing. I got into that, which is coincidentally one of my defining moments that we should talk about later. Go ahead.
I'm going to stop you because it's going to take you an hour to get through this. Yeah. And I know that because we've done this twice now. But so I'm going to stop you. So your engineering background, the thing that I love about your engineering background is all the cool shit that you do. Oh, that was our first swear word, by the way.
Ooh, shit.
Yeah, you do the cool stuff that, like, I always kind of think of if you were had the freedom that Mark Robber, is that his name? That engineer that did the glitter bomb things, Roman. Like you make stuff like him, like where it's just cool stuff. And like, he's amazing. But you do that like on a scale of things that matter to you. And because even when I was at up in Michigan this last week, you're building out schematics for like your turntable and what you're going to do with that whole madness. So when you say engineering, it's kind of cool engineering stuff.
On the personal side, that's my happy place. That designing, that creative engineering and development of an idea is absolutely my happy place. I love like letting my brain go to the stuff I think is cool and figuring out how to make it happen and like what pieces and elements would be, you know, can be part of that. So I love taking part in creative things, and I have engineering backgrounds in mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, and audio engineering. So I tend to create things that delve into pieces and parts of all that with some of my fun projects.
So what's interesting here is because we know each other in our dime, we've known each other since what, fourth grade, right?
Fifth.
So I'm going to challenge you on that. I think it was fourth. Mrs. Beam was fourth, yeah?
Fifth.
That's fifth? Okay.
Yeah. But it's cool. We've done this three times now.
Dunlop? We've had this exact thing, right? That's
yes.
I feel like
Miss Briad is who I had for four.
Whatever. I don't give a shit. So for 20 something years, or no, what do we have? 30 years?
Yeah, it's more than 30. We're coming up on like 35. We were like 35
years.
We were like 10-ish, 10, 11 at that time.
And so it's weird because we know each other's story. So it's weird to kind of like set the stage for people who don't know us.
Yeah.
But what I would like, we would never, if you and I didn't know each other, we would never go, all right, well, tell us your backstory, because it's so misguided. So the things that what I think I would do in a situation like this to help the audience is let me ask you questions. Give me short answers. Okay.
I'll try.
All right. You were CEO of Roba. Do you want to talk about that?
So we got to touch on Roba. So Roba, well,
that's a yes or no question.
Oh, do I want to talk about it?
Yeah,
sure. Roba was the acronym racking our brains.
That was not the first time you and I worked together. So let's put a pin in Roba for a second. We've done everything from caddying, working in restaurants, working hard labor, digging ditches and stuff like that. Yeah. And then we both went off to separate colleges. I went to Miami and you were in Michigan. And then when we came back, the next thing that we did was create a company called Roba Interactive. I was working on a Dave Grusin concert. For those who don't know, Dave Grusin did like films like The Firm. He did the score for The Firm, On Golden Pond, and my favorite, Goonies. And we were working with Phil Ramone, who, you know, produced Billy Joel, like he was Billy Joel's producer, Paul Simon, blah, blah, blah. Go look him up.
If you don't know the name, go look it up.
So we were working with him and we were doing the concert for PBS and he was playing the Goonies, or Dave Grusin played Goonies live. And I was like, this is amazing, right? Like full orchestra. And Phil Ramone was drawing out stage plots, crumpled it up, piece of paper, and threw it away. I took that piece of paper and then
of the orchestra that was playing with Dave Grusin for the concert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this was right, I'm thinking like the week that the iPad came out.
Right.
You know, it was like 2008. Does that sound about right? Or was it late? Yeah.
No, it sounds about right.
Maybe 9, 10, somewhere in that.
Roba was like 10, 11, I think.
So I took that and we were doing the concert anyway. So I had all the stems from all these things, and that we made an interactive stage plot with the iPad where right. you could turn and listen to different,
yeah,
like just the violins from that Goonies thing. And then Larry was like, there's something here. Like if we,
I'm going to take one step back, Anya.
Okay.
From you. All right. So before we even thought to get on that iPad, the genesis came from you and I sitting at my apartment in Miami, up in Miramar, and listening to the new Dave Matthews album that came out on vinyl.
Oh, right.
And we were playing it. So you and I were sitting there in the, you know, in the family room.
The living room with the liner notes.
Yeah, yes, with the liner notes. Listening to the new album for the very first time, we were like, okay, we're not going to listen to it so we can play it on vinyl and whatever. That was my thing, not your thing. But we thought it'd be fun. And we're going through that and we're like, God, how do people have this sort of experience, like to be able to connect with the music in different ways, but you know, in the new world, in the new digital realm. And it was right as the iPad had come out, and we said, man, there's got to be a way to leverage like the iPad in some way to create some of this stuff. So that then we started to develop like, well, what if we could do this and maybe this and that, you know, and that.
But it always started with someone should invent a way to sit and listen to music a new way. And right. we're like, oh, yeah. That could be us.
Yes. Yes.
Maybe.
Yeah. So we try to develop that further to figure out like, how could we show some of the stuff we're talking about here? Like show some of the behind the scenes stuff about how things happen and what happens with that, that like people don't get to see because people like Phil Ramone throw it away and it gets
thrown away. Right. Oh, and so we created this app, you know, and it was through Concord Records. They released the first one. I mean, it was through Robo. We released it, but the album and the concert was Concord Records. And so they're like, what you guys have going on is amazing. And like, it's hard to explain now because if you say it's an interactive music listening experience, like whatever, but it was like, I mean, Billboard wrote about us. You know, they said that this is the next wave of music.
It was new. No one was doing it at the time. And now
it was taking the television side and then the tech side, merging them in a way that was never done before. And to this day has never been done.
Right.
And then, so then we got just through our relationships, we, you know, latched onto Pitbull. And so we spent 3 months on the road with him and then released the Pitbull app.
The Robo app and, you know, the whole Planet Pit app and being one of the first artists to really take this and we launch it together because it's a new idea, new company, and it's a new venture, a new adventure.
So the point of going down that whole road is we had a couple CEOs in the beginning, some pretty heavy hitters. And if you look at our board, so Larry Rosen was on our board, Phil Ramone was on our board, Pitt was on our board, and then we brought in investors, and then it was me, you, and Brandon really in my garage, yes, making the sausage. And so it was a very interesting dynamics. You have all these heavy hitters basically guiding us, showing us the business side. I remember I quit my job the day that my second son was born. I had to leave the hospital to go do our sit down interview with Pitt. So, you know, like that's how awesome my wife is that she would understand these things. She's like, yeah, whatever, leave.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the point is the two CEOs didn't really understand what we were trying to accomplish. So then you stepped in to be the CEO. And the thing about it is, you know me and I have such a hard time with you and I and our dynamics of you're the boss and you're like, you were out there flying with like meeting with artists and stuff. And I was back here making the sausage and putting together all the pieces and stuff. And like, I had a hard time with that from an ego standpoint.
Yeah.
And it was a very weird shift in our dynamic of friendship.
Yeah. How'd that work out?
Oh, it didn't work out great. I mean,
here we are, no, you know, 10 years later, but
10 years later on a podcast and no one's ever heard of Roba, but you know.
Yeah, it was really super cool. Look, the reality was is like there were pieces and parts of it during that time. I of course was trying to learn and figure things out. I was trying to balance between like what the board was saying and the things that we wanted to do because we wanted to take, you know, all their info into account. But then the reality of like us sitting in the garage and what we're trying to do and trying to accomplish and, you know, balance some of those things. Yes, like going out and, you know, flying to New York for day trips to go meet with, you know, publicists or, you know, possible sponsorships and record companies and stuff like that.
So, but you got to admit, all that sounds glamorous. Like, if you don't know, it sounds glamorous.
No,
but
yeah.
It's not.
So taking a step back, the reality of your situation, you already mentioned, like, you quit working. You quit a great paying job and your career to pursue this, right? To go down this path and pursue this. And we did not yet have like means for a stream of income associated with this.
Right.
Kind of
yeah.
You like,
it's
you
definitely
like
a leap of faith.
Yes. You took a huge leap of faith there. And as far as that, like not glamorous type stuff, I was continuing to work full time. I was still full time faculty. I was actually more than full time because full time was like 5 classes. I was doing 7 classes, but because I ran the department, I got to do all the scheduling. So I scheduled myself for a solid 2.25 days of like Monday through Wednesday morning. So I could get right. all of my week's worth of classes and work done out of the way so that I could then turn around and work for Roba for the rest of the 5 days. Or
And the thing about dealing with heavy hitters and these, like, you know, go look them up, Phil Ramone and Larry, like they yeah. sold companies for multi-millions of dollars and stuff. So the thing about them is A, they know how to do it, but B, they are relentless. So yeah. like if they couldn't get a hold of you, like you had to walk out of class. Like if right. Larry's calling or whatever,
yeah.
it's essentially if the board's calling you, sorry, class, I gotta take this call or whatever, because business had to get done.
Right.
And you were the leader, you know, and God, again, going back to the kind of glamorous, like jet setting, going and doing all these meetings and stuff. That's glamorous if you have money, which we had, we finally got financing or
investor.
Yeah. I'm sorry. We finally got an investor but it's still like you look at runways and it's not like it's still, you're still trying to build a business, which is the hardest thing in the world. And it's funny because I look at my partners now and after successfully selling a company, that was the most stressful time of my life.
Yeah.
It's stressful to get a business going, to have a successful company is stressful, and then to sell a company is successful. And then even now, like you always look from the outside and you're like, oh, it's so glamorous to do this, and this. Right. And there's certainly from the television side, there's certain glamorous things.
Right.
And even the entertainment side, like I will put up the traveling with me, you and Brandon traveling with Pitbull around the country for months and months and months. And then like doing the backstage thing, all that. It was awesome. That was glamorous. That was awesome. But you're working. You know, it's not like, I mean, we were hanging out and stuff like that when we weren't working, but you're always like, did we miss this? Or what are we doing here? Or like, could this used in the app or
I remember, this? Yeah. I know, man. I very vividly remember when we knew we had one of the windows, we were going to be able to capture some of the stuff in the hotel room for the recordings or whatever. And we didn't have exactly the stuff that I knew we needed to be able to make it happen the way we needed it to happen. Right. From a equipment standpoint, I remember you and I had a contention on this. So I was like, dude, I've got to go get a small mixer. I have to go get a small mixer. There's no way this is going to not go well if I don't get a mixer in this. You know, connected with his equipment or whatever. And I was in a panic, man. I like jumped in the rental car that we had at that time to go get to the store to go pick up that mixer. And I was like, the whole time I was like, if Pitt shows up right now, and to your point from earlier, like we got a small window here, right, to capture whatever we need to do. Pitt shows up right now and I'm gone, we're screwed and it's my fault. This is the non-glamorous part of stuff.
With any star, any major star, like it's, you have a 1 o'clock meeting, you know, it's not going to, and this is what you hate about my life right now. It's like, if you say you're going to be there at 1, you're there at 1. I'm there at 1, but I know we're not filming till 7 at night. Right. Like, and so that was the thing is like Pitt could show up at any time. And we were in the hotel across from him, like, or there's something there. So it's like, it's literally, he just has to knock on the door and come in. And we were recording, Give Me Everything.
Yeah.
So that was the other aspect is he was making music, and that's what people don't. And that's what I loved about our app is we highlighted that dude, this mega star, he would record some of his biggest hits in hotel rooms.
Yeah.
And so it was crazy. And so we'll show little pictures of that, like of you in there, or I think we even have video of that. But that was the thing is like if Pitt shows up when he's supposed to, and you're not there, yeah, we're screwed. And you only have one shot at these things.
Yeah.
Now, even though, like, we were friendly with, like, I always say that we're friendly, we're not friends. Like, there's definitely a line of, like, his time is more valuable than anyone's. And you're working around any artist, you're working around their schedule, and you have to be so fluid with that.
Yeah.
So Roba, one of the things that you and I talked about before doing this is we should give our kind of defining moments and kind of set the stage of what the defining moments. I have two that I want to talk about on this podcast. One of them was Roba. Roba was a hugely defining moment in my life that A, I quit my job.
Yeah.
So that to me was a defining moment of you don't think that you can do it. And that's one of the things that everyone who's like, oh, go follow your dreams and stuff. Those are the people successful saying that, right? Because they made it. But like, when you're in the middle of failure or what you were perceiving as failure, or you have no idea, like, okay, well, our runway, like we would constantly be doing runways. Okay, well, we're in business for 3 more months. We're in business for 2 more months.
Oh, yeah. So let's define that. So the runway is the amount of money that we have available and what we see on our expenditures about how much money we have until we run out, right? So
until we run out.
Yes.
And which, by the way, we were financing ourselves, like our, like in the investment, we didn't take a salary.
No,
we had to buy equipment. We had to buy computers. All that was like us.
Yeah.
And even with our board, they didn't really help us. Mm-hmm. You know, they helped us and somewhat rightfully so, you know, their knowledge, we got a master's class from very, very successful people. So that was the payment. Like,
yeah, invaluable in that regard.
Yes. Invaluable. Yeah. Like if we had to pay for that, you know, but the thing is while you're in the middle of it, you don't know.
No,
you're scared. You're constantly scared.
Agreed. It's a panic. It's a complete panic. And you're so more so than mine in the sense that you were in a position that you had the ability to quit and go down the full path. And that's one of the things that I respect hugely about you and your career, though, is you have always bet on yourself. You have like every stage along the way, like diving in your ability, your work ethic and how you approach things and putting all that stuff first. You've sacrificed a lot of stuff to like along the way to be able to be where you're at and be as successful as you are because you have bet on yourself. And then there are many scenarios where it puts you in a complete and utter panic and it's the motivation that you need in order to make sure you succeed. So, and it's worked.
But we both have that, but I think that that's kind of an upbringing thing. Well, a couple things. One is it's the whole, like when you have nothing, you know, when you're starting from nothing, like, I mean, there was times where I still have this up in my house, the Gibson Chet Atkins. It's not the Dave Matthews guitar. It's the guitar Dave Matthews played, but wasn't his. Right. So I found a broken one for $300 in a pawn shop. And I was like, I'll never ever see this again. And my rent was $365 and I had $400 in my bank account. I was like, I got to buy this guitar. And so I didn't pay the rent that month. And all right, that's probably not, that doesn't make me look good because I'm buying like things, but like what else, when am I ever going to see that? But the other aspect of it is like, I only had $400 in my account. You know, it was like pay rent or, you know, I remember times of like, I'll finally, early on in my career, like you're not making money. And so it's like, all right, payment came in. We can go to a grocery store now, you know? And so when you're kind of back against the wall of that, it's not so much that you go, I'm going to bet on myself. It's, I need to have the skills to make money in a lot of different ways, right? If this way is not making it, then I want to shift to this. If that's not making it, I can shift this. That's what got me into doing interactive websites, CD-ROMs back in the day.
But to your credit, also, you would not say no to a thing. Like something would come up and somebody would go like, do we know how to do this thing? You'd be like, yeah, we can do, I can do that. You know, whatever thing. And you're like, I have no idea how to do that. I'm going to go figure it out. I'm going to learn how to do that.
Yeah.
And whether that was graphics or web or whatever the case was, and you'd go and do and learn it and make it happen and figure it out. So again, it's a huge credit to your success. So wait, I want to go back to, so from a Roba standpoint, the defining moment though, like what piece? Cause we haven't really gotten to the dissolve of.
Well, so I mean, the spoiler there is that you and I were at each other's throats on a daily basis, just disgusted with each other. And then you told me to come over one day.
We were out at your house. It was in the driveway at your house.
It was in driveway. Okay. So we were outside and you're like, hey, I'm going to step down and leave Roba to save our friendship, which is a hugely defining moment. Cause I don't think we'd be friends if you didn't do that. Like we'd be those because Roba could have been successful. Like it was gaining momentum. And then you decided to step down, which at that point it was, again, to save the friendship, which is.
Yeah. I mean, we had put in, yeah. So to that, it's not like there was a lot coming in at that point. But it was that sweat equity, right? And all that time and effort that we had put into for like a year and a half at that point or something along those
we
lines.
Did. But knowing business now, like we had IP, we had assets, we had computers, we had, you know, a lot of stuff going for us. We had a board that believed in us. We could have gotten more money and stuff. So we, like they always say in business, you always hit that inflection point where like you're doing this, and all of a sudden it just goes up. Like we were slowly. I think we were probably 6 months away from, especially with the board's idea. Like our thing was a very curated album experience. They wanted to open it up and have the record companies give the curated experience, so we would build the kind of platform that they could do that on. Yeah. But anyways, so the point is, you quit and left us high and dry.
You're welcome. Allowed you to then like partner with Brad and become Corner of the Cave, that led to the where you're at now. So it all worked out in that regard. You know, so it was, look, the reality was, I mean, the thing that we, not just like from an ego standpoint, I mean, I think it's ego from both sides, but it also had to do with our, like, just our history, like where we were at from a maturity level and standpoint in our lives, and our inability to let go of our insane back history of everything under the sun that we've done for decades, right? Like what, you know, in the stupidity associated with, in the arguments associated with it, you know, like it was just so obvious that when we would, like, when there was any bit of a disagreement, we had zero ability to actually like talk that through. And it was like going back into every argument we've ever had in the past that, you know what I mean? Like, and just like instantly bringing that stuff up, and you can't operate that way. And so it was one of those things I trust me, it was not an easy decision. And it was something that like I worked with Carrie, like quite a bit, like talking it through. I was like, what am I doing? Like, am I going to sacrifice the friendship to try and figure out like how to make this work? And by the way, the only reason I want to make that work is because I want to work with people that I want to work with. You know what I mean? It's like, so there's, it's a lose-lose at that point. You know what I mean? Like it's for the money. Like that's going to suck. Like everything about it. So I stepped down and I left Roba, and you know, we figured out what that meant from a business, you know, perspective. And then, you know, coincidentally, like shortly after, I ended up getting an offer to come back up and work, you know, back in Michigan and again, back in the tech industry and took a job. And it, being up, you know, back home near family was really important for Carrie and her family and stuff too. So that made a lot of sense. And I've been doing that since.
The defining moment is, because you could say it's a defining moment, but what do you learn from those defining moments, right? I think that's kind of what interests me. And what I learned from that is, ego can kill a business. I mean, you could have the best product possible. You could have success. If you're an egomaniac like I was at that time, that's very toxic. And it made it, like, I've taken a back seat a lot of times now and kind of just view things. I'm like, all right, my opinion can matter, but if you have a lot of people who've got strong opinions and stuff, I'm going to take a back seat. And if I believe that that has some merit, I'll go with it. Now, obviously, if I don't believe it has merit, I'll say something. But my role has changed after Roba, like what I thought. Because I also thought that, like, business has to be cutthroat, and, you know, and you have to go down this path of, like, step on people and stuff. And it's just not true. Like, one of the things is you mentioned Brad. So Brad, after Roba, Brad and I started Corner of the Cave with Brandon, who is part of Roba. So the three of us start Corner of the Cave, and then we then go to Texas Crew Productions. We merge our companies together.
Corner of the Cave did what?
Television production. Yeah. So like we did the history of Atlanta rap with Ludacris for VH1, which that's my ego coming back. It's like me name dropping like this. But so we start, or we merge with Corner of the Cave merges with Texas Crew. I don't know how they classified it, but essentially Brad and I went to Texas Crew and became partners.
Yeah, it's a merger regardless. You guys became partners, like whatever. The company, your company became part of Texas Crew and you guys.
And by the way, I bring that up because they're the nicest guys. Like Chip and David are incredible. Like we have Chip on as one of our guests. He worked for ESPN's got great stories. I I don't think I've laughed harder on this podcast than listening to his ESPN stories. But the point is I realize that if you get with good people and you're a good person, then it can work out. And they're talented, and Brad and I have talent. So, you know, it's one of these things that if I didn't go through Roba, I don't know that I would. I certainly wouldn't be where I am now because of everything that happened. But it was one of those defining moments of like, what do I actually want out of this? Do I want to be angry all the time? Or do I want to just go, I'm going to find the right people to work with? And it's not that you were the wrong person to work with.
No, I get it.
It was our history was just that. It's like,
yeah, it was not the right fit. I mean, we like from a business perspective. And look, I've said this all along, like, and that was the easy thing for me. Like, I wasn't going to try and like blow shit up on my way out or, you know, whatever. Like you were the heart of the idea and the creation of the content. That has been your gift from day one, like from, you know, from school, of your ability to create content that is interesting and working with the pieces and the elements that you have to come up with really, really cool shit. So, and we're literally in the midst of it right now with PJ.
With PJ.
Yeah. So that's been your gift all along. So, with you being the heart of it and creating that content, you know, being the person that's you're doing it. You're the one that's doing it, right? Like it didn't make sense. It didn't make sense for me to keep trying to fight.
But that's the ego thing too. Like one of the things that I've realized through this is it's not one person. One person can't make it happen.
Sure.
And that's the thing is if I want, like, and this is the thing that I would struggle. I would want to do it. I'd want to sell it. I'd want to take credit for it. And I'd want to be the face of it. And the thing is, if you're the face of it, you can't be doing it. Right. And if you're out there trying to sell it, can't be doing it, can't be the face of it.
Yeah.
Right. And so like everyone had their role. And I think that's one of the biggest things I took away from Roba is stick in your lane, do your lane the best as you can. And if you don't get credit for it, you don't get credit for it. But who cares?
Yeah.
And you know why? Well, but just to the point, like, so we were written up in Billboard, but it was Larry who was the face. So even that, like, that does nothing to us. No one cares about that now. So like, we were like, our egos were bruised then for something that doesn't matter now.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. So that's one defining moment. What's your defining moment? Mm-hmm. Really? We talked about that. You were going to talk about defining moments and
I'm wondering about the transition or whatever. So one of the ones that was really big that is one of the reasons one of that has us sitting here today goes all the way back to my first degree at University of Michigan. So I was in the mechanical engineering degree program, which was really a like follow in my dad's footsteps scenario. My dad was a mechanical engineer, you know, and he worked
at Ford.
I worked for Ford his whole entire career,
right.
Professional career, right?
And when you're from Michigan, you're looking for how do I get in the car industry?
Yeah. You're in the car industry. But I just always had in my head, like you could have a really good career being an engineer and all, you know, that kind of stuff. Like I saw my dad's success and the success for our family and stuff like that. So I just kind of followed in those same footsteps. It made a lot of sense because it all came very easy to me in terms of like just. Cause I had to hold the flashlight for my dad on every repair of every vehicle or appliance or household, you know, maintenance or like whatever that was. So I had a really good understanding of a lot of different things at that time. Anyway,
you want to know what's funny is I judge my success on how many times I've flown you down to fix things at my house.
You're like super successful. So I'm in like the last year of my degree program for bachelor's in mechanical engineering. And I'm cramming one night. It's like 1 a.m. We're cramming for finals. And I've got, you know, a group of people that I'm studying with, but we're at this like large table at the media union up on North Campus.
I know where you're going with this.
Yeah. And we're sitting there and I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I'm trying to figure out like this stuff so I can answer for the test tomorrow. And like, I just like took a second. I like sat back and I was just cause I was tired. I needed a mental break for a hot second. And I sat back and I started and I was like observing the people that are at the table that I'm working with. And they're having these like intense conversations about the content that we are learning. And I'm listening to them and I'm going, these people are trying to learn this shit so they can actually understand it, and they want to know it so they can use it and do it. I am trying to learn this stuff so I can answer it for this test tomorrow.
One of the things that I know about you is, even if you know it, it's not just about knowing it. It's how do you take the next step with it? That's the thing. Is like you can get to the point where you know it, sure. but not even just apply. Not even just apply, because what you're good at is, and you've done this to my house, so I know this, is that like you will go, all right, you could do this, but it would be cool if we did this, you know? And that's the one thing that I've always taken, and I tell this to every young filmmaker. I hate that word, filmmaker. Every young person who wants to get me enter.
Better than a YouTuber.
Television producer, whatever. I say, you always have to have that thing, and I got this from you, go, oh, it's cool when they did this. You know, it's cool when they did this. You would always get really excited in a movie or something like that. You'd be like, oh, it's cool when they did this scene. Or when you're like, oh, you know, like this record player is cool because they did this or whatever. And I always apply that to the other things. Like, what's your moment in this act or in this sequence that goes, it's cool if they did this? And so that's where I look at with your university experience, is that I think you got to the point where you didn't want to go, oh, it'd be cool if we did this. Like, take that next step of, you know, yes, because you're good. You know you could get the information. Like, you proved it with all your grades up to when, you know, even to that. I'm sure you got a good grade on that, you know, but it was when you stopped going, what's the next step? What's the next thing that would make this cool?
Yeah, that's valid.
From my
no, I get it. You're not wrong. I've never thought of it in that regard, but that to me kind of just feeds into that. It just reinforces the, I don't want to do this for a living. But yeah, it's kind of what that is, because to what end, for what point, or what am I trying to do or accomplish? And I just, like, my brain went to all these places of like, I don't want to use this information to do cool shit, like, that I actually want to do. I want to do something I want to do. And that, in that moment, I knew this wasn't it. And then this is the other piece that goes along with that, that again, that has us here. That's what comes after, right? That you're always interested for that exact moment was, I did that mental, like, what do I want to do? Like, what am I actually, which sounds stupid, but you know, I for the, like, the younger people, like, I think maybe now it's more in culture, but like when we were younger, there wasn't a lot of like resources and stuff to like actually really explore that, you know, like what's out there. What do you really want to do? Like what I just
percent.
So as I'm doing that exploration though, about what do I love? Like what would I really want to do and work on? Like everything kept coming back to music and audio in some way. Like I loved going and recording with bands. I loved making mixtapes, like not just like music, but like, you know, like the mixes that we do for our basketball, you know, stuff like that. Like there was a lot of passion involved with that. And I was like, maybe I'm like, there's a lot of stuff that's out there. And you had gone and started working, you know, to go to film school at that time. And so I asked you, like, one of the days I was like, hey man, like if I wanted to work in audio, like what does that path look like? And you had asked some people, you like some of your instructors, and I don't know if it was Goodley or Moss or exactly who it was, but I know you spoke with a couple of your trusted, you know, instructors at that time, mentors, and they had said Full Sail, you know, university, and that they knew, you know, people that came out of Full Sail, they knew Full Sail was a good program, you know, whatever the case was. So I started looking into that, and it looked like exactly what I wanted to do. I mean, they market the shit out of that place, and it's amazing, and understandably, you know, so, but, you know, sent out for the info, got the pamphlet, like started going through everything, and then just started going like, yeah, this is what I want to do. Like, I want to do this next. And it led me.
We should hit them up for sponsorship.
Sure.
Yeah.
Full Sail University. Full Sail,
Fullsail.com.
Look,
don't say that yet. They haven't paid us.
So listen, it was a really, really eye-opening and amazing experience that I had there, and made friends, you know, for life, and mentors for life, and all sorts of that good stuff.
So last thing, like, because we could dive into this forever, but it's a first episode. We shouldn't keep people. If they've made it this long, we shouldn't keep them too long. But so I'm yeah. My mom is turned off 20 seconds in. I get it. I've heard it.
No, we got to hit him with the promo videos of the interviewers.
So let's end with, what do you think people can expect from this podcast?
I think they can expect, if we're going to figure out a way to get truly unfiltered between us, I think they can still see some just like raw fun banter between us. But I think that they can expect to...
In the future, they'll see us banter, but there's nothing to suggest that that is on the way.
I think we're a little more natural and unfiltered than the last round.
Yes. And I will suggest, if we make it to episode 100, we release our first episode that we shelved.
The real first one or the second first one?
Both. But if we make it to 200, 200 gets us, or we do a Patreon, like, hey, you want to buy some really bad podcasting?
I'm sure it'll come out before that.
All right. So banter, which certainly is not on the menu now, but.
No. Yeah. But just some fun, interesting content associated with people that we find interesting, you know, in our lives that are doing cool stuff in some way.
Yeah.
So I think that's fun.
I do too. For me, what I think can come out of this, other than, yeah, you're right. Like we're going to talk to some really amazing people, but what I think will happen, you and I have experiences that I think everyone has had, breakups,
sure.
Universal topics like breakups, anxieties, figuring out industries, figuring out how to make a living, figuring out family. So I think that if we can walk that line of being entertaining and still, you know, dive in that kind of unfiltered, then I think it'll be relatable to a lot of people.
Yeah, that's fair. You and I have talked about how are we, part of it is we are figuring this stuff out, right? So that's the reality of it. So how do we build in some of those pieces and then also the interviews and, you know, and whatever, and we're working on that, but I agree with you. I think that's a good assessment. I think there's stuff. It's weird to say, man, but like we're older now and we've got experience. Like we're not young, you know, pups anymore. We're not young.
Like I think the fact that we went through a lot in two different experiences with you and I, and then couple on with our wives have different experiences. Like the fact that my kids speak Spanish is weird, you know, like, so not weird. That's not a right way of saying it. Cause I think it's amazing. I think it's awesome, but I think it's a kind of melting pot of experiences that I think people would be able to relate to. All right. Anything else? Any final thoughts? Hey, we're having a premiere party on Tuesday. So I got to go clean the backyard.
Oh.
For our Peacock show. Mm-hmm. We're trying to figure out a way to end this, right? So, remember, good night, everybody, G&E.
Yeah, I do. We should.
That's from play the Animaniacs,
clip,
right?
Well, yeah, can we use that? Can we use that clip without getting in trouble?
No, we're going to get in trouble. All right, that's it. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.